Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 275. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about medieval monasteries and two separate invasions, centuries apart, as we go to Normandy. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, there's going to be a shakeup in the online travel industry as the federal government has authorized the sale of ITA software to Google. And ITA is in the travel industry, so now is Google. In the good news department, the TSA has announced that at least one study has found the full body screening to have no significant health risks. But there are apparently risks if you are too tall and you want to fly. A man was kicked off a Horizon Air flight because he was 6'9". That, I'm sure, was not entirely his fault. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
I'd like to welcome to the show Michael Kenny, who's coming to us from Hudson, Wisconsin, and has come to talk to us about Normandy. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you. I've been listening for quite a while now.
And obviously, when we talk about Normandy, we're talking about France and probably a place where most Americans, and I think many people in the world, know from the World War II history. The history in Normandy goes back a little further than that, though. But what led you to Normandy?
Well, actually, I went there with a group, a tour group, and I've been there a few times. And I think before I went, myself and many others thought Normandy was World War II sites, really. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more than that. I think I've even talked to people, they thought it might be a city, not really a region, like a state is here. But what drew me and everyone else I was with was the fact that the World War II sites. But to end, it was much more than just the World War II beaches and so on. It was the people, the culture, the countryside. So there's so much more than just the Normandy World War II sites, as well as even the invasion of Normandy from William the Conqueror going over in 1066 to England. So it's just an amazing history as well.
And you mentioned William the Conqueror, William of Normandy, basically, the settled down Viking there who became French. And you, I believe, home-based out of Bayeux.
Yes. Well, Bayeux, yes, that's what I think is really the heart, a great place to begin your Normandy tours. But yes, right outside of Bayeux is where William the Conqueror took his French and went over. They didn't call him the French then, but over to England and had the Battle of Hastings back in 1066. But Bayeux was the beginning area of that. And now the Bayeux tapestry still survives. Mm-hmm. And hard to believe, it's almost 1,000 years old. And that really depicts, you know, William conquering England during that battle. So it's an interesting history.
And that is, as I recall, in a museum there.
Yes, they have a museum. At one time it was inside this tapestry is what we're talking about. It's like 70 yards long. It's just amazing. It used to be inside the Cathedral of Bayeux, which is 1,000-year-old as well. However, they moved it into a building that works very well for it. So you go inside, you see the artwork that's all stitched almost 1,000 years ago. Just amazing. For 70 yards long, it's about 3 feet high. And it talks about the beginning battle from William and his men getting suited up with armor and so on, getting into the boats and heading to England. And then it actually, the pictures depict the battle itself, because most people did not read or write during that time as well. So the neat thing is, even films today use the Bayeux Tapestry. They look back on it to, you know, say for Robin Hood and so on, they can get an idea of what armory that the people use, the weapons, the colors, all that they use from the Bayeux Tapestry. So it's much more than just a historical document. We use it for films today, and it's just really amazing to see this almost 1,000-year-old tapestry and depicting an amazing battle.
Well, and it's so detailed. I know you, for instance, you can make out the Norman secret weapon.
You can. There's so much to that. The weapons, the arrow that killed the king of England at the time through the eye. There's so much detail. You go through there usually pretty quick, but you could spend hours just at each piece. But there's some books, too, that help you and give you an idea of exactly what happened. So, yes, there's great detail there.
And the secret weapon being the stirrup, because that was a new invention at the time. So getting back to Normandy, and this not being just the William of Conqueror podcast, but that's the sort of stuff that you know I love. What do you recommend for an itinerary for Normandy?
Good question. Most people fly into Paris and then they get over to Bayeux. So I say Bayeux, you could use other towns of Caen. There's many places, but I really think Bayeux is a great epicenter, if you will, to begin your trips. And I suggest flying into Paris. You can take a train to get to Bayeux. However, when you get to Bayeux, it's difficult because there's so many little villages all through Normandy and you can't get around by train. So I think the best bet is either rent your own car to get around. You could go with a tour group as well if you want. And they also have day trips that just do the beaches, the invasion beaches as well. So my itinerary would really be based out of Bayeux. If you spend 4 nights in Bayeux, that's great. Because like I said, it's about 5 miles, 7 miles to the beaches from Bayeux. And that works well because you can also go to Mount Saint-Michel, which is in Lower Normandy. And that's probably about a 2.5-hour drive. That's probably the longest. Saint-Mary-Église in a little village. Omaha, Utah Beach, Arromanches, where the Landy Museum is, Caen, where they had this peace memorial, and then just driving through the countryside too. So my itinerary would really be based probably 2 days seeing the beaches of Utah, Omaha, and then maybe a full day into Mount Saint-Michel, which is just an amazing abbey in Lower Normandy, and just a full day itself just driving the Norman countryside as well.
Okay. Now let's slow down just a little bit here because you were naming some places without talking about the significance of them. So when we talk about the beaches, there were 5 invasion beaches, and the 2 you named are the 2 U.S. beaches, which are obviously more popular for the U.S. tourists. There are the 3 Canadian and English beaches as well further north of that. But
correct.
I think you're right that a lot of the Americans want to go over there and see some of what happened there. And then you also mentioned Saint-Mary-Église, which would be having the significance as the first village that was liberated, basically, during the invasion.
Yeah, you really have your history down, Chris. That's exactly correct. So I will slow down a little bit. There are the 5 beaches, Omaha, Utah, that I mentioned. There's also Sword, Juneau Beach as well. But the people of significance that most people hear about, of course, is Omaha Beach, and that's very close to Bayeux. You drive from Bayeux straight basically northwest of the city itself, and you get to Omaha Beach. And today, it doesn't look anything like you would have seen in Saving Private Ryan. There's a little road. There's a couple little cottages that are there, a lot of the little resort area. But it's important also when you're looking at touring the area to make sure you drive down to Omaha or any of the beaches when the tide is out. I've been there when the tide has been in, you can't see the beach at all. Actually, the sea is right up to the coast, and it doesn't look like anything you would imagine Omaha would be. It's a really good idea to check when the tide is out so you can go down there and actually see the beach. You can get out. You can walk around. They have some buildings around it, some structures talking about the battle itself, but it's kind of nice just to walk around there. Very peaceful.
And there's still a few of the German bunkers, as I understand, up on the heights that you can tour.
Yes, there is that. Mm-hmm. Right behind or above Omaha Beach is the beautiful American Cemetery, which is just amazing to see that because it sits up on above it. And one of the groups I was with, there was a World War II veteran, and he fought in the Pacific Theater. And this was about 3 years ago. And this is his first time to Europe during this visit. And it was wonderful because he invited us to go with him to see his brother's grave. And that was fascinating because he had not seen his brother since the day they both left for the military. His brother went to Europe to fight, and he went to the Pacific, and we all went and got to see his brother's grave, and very emotional for everybody. Of course, we didn't even know his brother, but it was emotional. But again, that's a beautiful cemetery above Omaha Beach, very, very moving. So that's fascinating alone. You could spend a half a day easy with Omaha Beach and the cemetery itself.
And then you mentioned the Peace Memorial.
Yes, the Peace Memorial. That's in Cannes. And basically what that is, it's talking about really the wars after 1900, from World War One, World War Two, and a more recent one. So it's not everybody thinks of, if you go to Cannes, you go to the Peace Memorial and in the museum. It's really all the battles of the 20th century. And I think they're going to be putting the battles of recent in there as well. It's very interesting, but you know, that's a little further away from town. But then you also mentioned the bunkers. Very interesting with the German bunkers. And I think the best place to view and actually get to go inside some of these bunkers is just past Omaha Beach. It's an area called Point du Hoc, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. But for the listeners that have never heard of Point du Hoc, that was an important area that the U.S. and the British bombed previously before the June 6th invasion on D-Day, because the Germans had part of their Atlantic Wall, these large cannons that could shoot ships from Utah Beach as well as from Omaha Beach out on this point. They called Point du Hoc. And so they had these rangers come in. They had to scale the walls and fight the Germans up there. But today you go, you see the area. You can walk actually in these huge craters from the bombing. It's just amazing to walk in these massive craters that are 20 feet deep throughout. And then you can actually walk inside some of these barracks that the Germans had where the cannons were and so on. It's fascinating. That again is at the Point du Hoc. And just beyond the Point du Hoc, there's a German cemetery as well. A lot of people forget about the Germans. Many thousands died there as well. But they have a very meaningful cemetery as well, which is definitely worth a stop for 30 minutes. Completely different from the American one, too. So those are all really roughly in the same area as Omaha Beach, Point du Hoc, and the German cemetery and the American cemetery. Then a little further down is Utah Beach. Utah Beach is, I think, when people conjure up their idea of what Omaha Beach looks like, it's actually Utah Beach, I think, is the best depiction of what Omaha Beach you think would look like. The reason is there's no buildings around it. There's no resorts. There's nothing like that. It's still all beach, lots of grass, and a very nice museum for guests to go and take a look at, too. So that's really well done. That's a little further away. That's probably about, I would say, 30 to 40 minutes away from Omaha and Point du Hoc and so on. But if you do drive as far, if you have that capability to go to Utah Beach, that's where you could go to St. Mary Eglise. And that's just a beautiful little French town with a couple thousand people in it. In St. Mary Eglise, they have a beautiful little church there that when the 101st Airborne came in, one of the paratroopers that came in, his name is John Steele, and it's in that movie, The Longest Day. He actually, when he was parachuting down, his parachute got tangled on the steeple of the church. And when the 101st came down, there was a big battle ensuing with the Americans and the Germans right there in the town. Fortunate enough for John Steele, no one saw him up on the steeple. He couldn't get down. He was hung up on there, just couldn't get down. But later on, he was actually captured, taken by the Germans, and later escaped and came back. And then he actually got fame out of World War II escaping that. But actually, St. Mary Eglise, again, it's very close to Utah Beach. It's a great stop. The church is beautiful. Everything's still intact. They have a wonderful airborne museum to go take a look at as well. And then the church windows were all blown out, of course, but now they've been replaced. And you go inside the church, and, you know, we see stained glass windows in churches today. They depict things from the Bible. But actually, one of the windows in this church depicts the 101st Airborne coming down in parachute. So the stained glass windows are a little bit different than you would expect to see in a church. But it's definitely worth a day trip out there. And just also that the Norman countryside, they have a main motorway that's easy to get to the cities. But I really encourage you, if you have the time, get off that main motorway, drive some of these little lanes, the hedgerows, and you're wondering maybe what a hedgerow is. A hedgerow is basically sometimes stone as well as like almost bushes on the side of the road. And the Americans found that very difficult to battle with because they couldn't see Germans on the other side and so on. But really, nothing has changed at all in this countryside in Normandy that it has since World War II. So it's great to get off the main road. I really encourage you to get off the main roads and enjoy the back roads and little road of Normandy. There's so much to see and do. There's so many little villages. And people are in such a hurry today to get from one point to the other. But It's a great idea. Get off that main motorway and see some of those little villages. There's great maps. The people are fantastic. A lot of the people speak English too. The smaller mom-pa type of places, they will not. But I've really not had a problem with speaking English with a lot of the people. I don't speak French, and I really haven't had a problem at all.
Okay. And the other place you named was Mont-Saint-Michel, which I mistakenly put in Brittany, but it's right there at the border between Normandy and Brittany. So this is the abbey that is an island at high tide and a peninsula at low tide.
Correct. Most people might not have ever heard of it, but if you've seen a picture, you'll know it. So you can Google it, look up Mount Saint Michel, and it's basically this big rock that sits in the water. Just like you said, in high tide, when the tide's in, it's out on a peninsula, and low tide, it's out all by itself with land all the way around it. But basically what this is there's an abbey on top of this large rock from the 8th century. This abbey's been around, and basically a gentleman had a dream that he was supposed to build an abbey there, and they have a statue out at Mount St. Michel with St. Michael, or they call it St. Michel. Mm-hmm. The neat thing is, like I said, it dates back from the 8th century. You drive out on the peninsula. At one time, it was always an island. Even when the tide was out, well, the pilgrims would have to walk through the mud, but they built a causeway, a roadway out there, so you can drive out there, even in high tide or low tide, get off, and you can actually walk up to the abbey itself. However, it's daunting, so if you have problems with walking or steps, this might not be the best place to go. But it's beautiful because it has this beautiful 8th century abbey up on the top and a beautiful, interesting village that surrounds it. So you can weave your way up. There's great little restaurants, these ramparts that surround it. You can walk the ramparts, have beautiful views of Normandy, as well as part of Brittany. You can see Brittany, of course, from there. But it's really a charming day trip. And some people say, well, when should I go, the morning or the evening? I would say either or. Middle of the day, maybe not so much. The nice thing, if you go in the morning, you can see the sunrise or the sun coming up in the buildings. And then sunset, it's beautiful, too, to see the sun going down and the light cast on the buildings, too. So as I know you're a photographer, Chris, mm-hmm. It's great both in the morning and the evening, even during the daytime.
Now, my understanding is in the middle of the day, too, I'm also going to be sharing the abbey with thousands of my closest friends coming in their buses to visit the place.
Exactly. There's a lot of day trips from all over, especially from Paris. It's a long day trip, but you're going to get crowds of coaches. So if you can get there right away when it opens, and opens, it's not like a theme park, but usually most buildings start opening up at 9 or 10 in the morning. But so if you can get there straight away, that's a good idea. Or even later, say after 4 o'clock when a lot of the coaches have gone back to Paris, it's a good idea. And there's also little bed and breakfasts and little teeny hotels on Mont Saint-Michel. So if you're thinking about just driving around, spending, say 4 days in Bayeux, if you can, I suggest going and spending a night at least in Mont Saint-Michel, spending an overnight in one of the bed and breakfasts, and then you can continue on to wherever you're going, be it the other part, southern France, or back to Paris. But it's definitely worth a visit. It's roughly, like I said, about 2-2.5 hour drive. But again, it's very scenic and well worth the drive itself.
And my understanding from people who've done it too is that spending the night there is a very different experience because really most of the tourists go home. And so you really do get the city more to yourself, obviously, if you can spend the night there.
Yeah, I've never stayed the night there, but I think in a lot of the towns like that, it's great if you can get in overnight because, like I said, the coaches come in and out in the morning and they leave in the afternoon. And right. To get that evening, it's perfect.
Are there any other highlights that you saw when you were in Normandy?
If you're coming from Paris, you might want to stop in Giverny, which is actually in Normandy as well,
sure.
Just
mm-hmm.
across the river. But in Nice, that's actually where Claude Monet lived and was inspired for all his Lily paintings and saw on the Japanese Tea Bridge. It's worth a stop in Giverny, the town, and going to Claude Monet's. But for the other areas, like I was saying before, just get off, explore some of those little lesser towns, try to stay off that main motorway if at all possible. One other town, if I can recommend, is the town of Rouen, R-O-U-E-N, Rouen. Mm-hmm. And you might have heard of that before. That's where actually Joan of Arc
right.
was killed at the stake and burnt, is in Rouen, and they have a little area for that. So that's definitely worth it too. So if you're tight on time, that's right off the main motorway as well, if you're heading from Paris to Normandy to make a stop in Rouen. to see that. Also, the famous cathedral there. Claude Monet painted the beautiful cathedral in different shades of light from the morning to afternoon to sunset. Very interesting. It's worth taking that stop to look at the cathedral, too. So there's so much to see and do. All of Normandy is well known for their dairy products. Mm-hmm. So they have great beef, wonderful yogurts, milks, all of that. Butters, they're very famous for. So enjoy all those aspects of the culinary delights of Normandy as well. So there's a lot to see and do in all of Normandy.
Okay. What's the biggest surprise?
The biggest surprise. You know what? Like I said, when I went there, we were going for the World War II sites. And I think the biggest surprise was the people. The people were great. You'll see American flags flying everywhere. They still truly, Normans at least, really appreciate the Americans and what we did for them, for their freedom. So I was really surprised by just the love for the Americans, which was really nice. You know, you hear negative things about the Parisians, which that isn't true, but towards Americans. But the Normans, they were great.
Okay. What was the best day you had of all this itinerary?
The best day I had. Well, I've done this itinerary twice. And the best day I had, it's a little bit more personal. I'll try to give you two. But it was probably made the most impact was that day that we went with the gentleman, his wife, to see his brother at the grave. You don't have to even know anybody there, but it's still an emotional experience to go and see the graves, the cemetery, with all the men and women, well, mostly men that, you know, fought for our country and for the freedom of so many Europeans as well. Very, very interesting. I think then on the other aspect, I was really thoroughly impressed with Mount Saint Michel. I wasn't sure what I was going to see or do, but it just blew me away. I enjoy photography as well. And going there and seeing this, you're in a complete flatland, and all of a sudden, in the middle of this water, this huge rock comes out of nowhere, and this beautiful abbey with this massive spire sits up on top. You can see it for 30 miles. You're driving, you'll see it 30 miles away coming towards it. It's just, it's incredible. So that really was much more interesting than I ever thought. And then, of course, the I'm going on a few, but the Bayeux Tapestry was very interesting. Right. Even the town of Bayeux, and I'll mention Bayeux one more time, that town did not get destroyed at all during World War II. Really, basically unscathed. It wasn't really touched at all. So that's another reason it's a great spot to stay, because it's a beautiful French village, great history, and the location to all the beaches, it's wonderful.
Okay. Best meal you had?
The best meal? Wow. I think it was the beef. I really enjoyed the beef. They're very proud of their beef. Just a regular steak. They make great steaks. We, as Americans, think we can only make the best steaks, but they really have some delicious steaks. And the butter was very good, too. I usually don't eat butter, but I had to have the butter. But I think the steak that I had over there was wonderful.
You're not going to get in trouble living in Wisconsin telling people you don't eat butter?
No, I probably won't. Good thing I'm from Minnesota.
Okay, there
that's,
we go.
That's all right.
You talked about meeting the American who was looking for his brother. How about the most memorable local that you met while you were there?
There was a gentleman that we had as a city guide in Bayeux, and he's from Bayeux. Very, very interesting person. He loved to talk about the city, the surrounding, and we actually went and had a couple beers even after the tour, and he just had an amazing history to talk about, not just the city itself, the countryside, but just interesting how the people of Bayeux live, which was fascinating. So just getting to know some of these locals, it was great. But I think the local guy that we had, he was very, very interesting.
Okay. Anything about Normandy that made you laugh and say, only in Normandy, only in France?
I think maybe, again, I'll go back to those little roads. We're on a big motor coach and you're going down there, and then you'll see two French people, or the Normans, parked next to each other in the middle of the road, just chit-chatting. I don't think they're used to a lot of traffic on some of these back roads.
So hedgerows on both sides, no way to pass.
No way to pass. And we just stopped, let them continue to converse, and then they finally got in their car and, you know, on they went. But I thought that was really interesting, because I think they're used to a slower pace of life there compared to what we are here. And I thought that was kind of refreshing. Maybe initially it was annoying, but then you kind of look back and it's like, wow, that's great that they can just pull over in the middle of the road and start chatting with each other on basically a one-way road, not enough for two cars. But that was really interesting. So I thought only in France or only in Normandy does that happen.
As we go to wind this down, last few questions. Your best money-saving tip?
If you're going without a tour group, the tour was wonderful, but if you plan on doing something like this on your own, don't try to book it via hotels.com. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe your sponsor, whatever like that. But maybe your sponsor does have some smaller little properties. I think if you stay away from some of the larger properties that you'll see on Expedia or, you know, namely a big site, call the CVB or look at the Convention Bureau or the tourist board of some of these little towns like Bayou. They'll have great little mom-pa type of bed and breakfast and so on that they're very inexpensive. So if you kind of get off that mainstream, find a little village that you like, something like Bayou, like I said. Get a hold of the CVB or the Convention Bureau or the City Tourism Board of whatever town you're looking at, and they'll have areas that you can stay at, bed and breakfasts or little hotels that charge, you know, half the price that some of these larger chains have. And I think you'll actually have a better experience too. So, you know, just kind of look in, you got to dig a little bit. And don't even, you know, use your Michelin guide or your Rick Steves. Go directly to the source at some of those little villages, and they're very, very helpful to help you find the hotels. And the food wasn't very expensive over there. Buy your wine and so on at some of the little grocery stores. Very inexpensive to do that and have little picnics. The French have French bread, of course, and some of the best bread and cheeses you're going to find. So just go grab those picnics and enjoy that. So it can be very cost effective to do a number of those things.
Excellent. Yeah, no, Expedia is not a sponsor, although they are my employer because they are the parent company for TripAdvisor where I work.
Oh, they are. Okay. Okay. I wasn't sure. Yeah, I'm sorry. You can edit that out too.
No, but, not a problem.
Yeah, you know what I meant there.
And then before I ask my last two questions, anything else that people should know before they go to Normandy?
Yeah. Today, I think the best thing to do is just get an ATM card with a Visa logo, and there's ATM machines everywhere. I really think that people think they can still use traveler's checks and so on. Yeah, that's really a thing of the past. I found it throughout the city or wherever you're at, there's ATM machines everywhere. Just make sure you have that ATM card with a Visa or MasterCard logo. Let your bank know that you're heading out and let them know what country you're visiting so you won't have any problems trying to access the machine. But yeah, cash is really used a lot there. A lot of places will not even accept a credit card at all. So you're going to need cash at most of these places, especially the smaller mom-pa type of shops.
Okay. And then last two questions. You know they're coming. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Normandy when what?
There are cows in the road. Again, I'll go back to those small, quaint roads. There's people driving their cars, having conversations. We were stopped twice by cows out on the road. And they just slowly drive up and they'll get out of the way. But that happened to us twice with cows in the middle of the road and only in Normandy.
And then if you had to sum up Normandy in three words, what three words would you use?
Historic.
Sure.
Delicious.
Okay.
And refreshing.
Excellent. Well, Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your love for Normandy.
It was a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
In news of the community, Jamie, fellow travel blogger from Travel Savvy Mom, commented on the episode about adventure travel in Botswana. My husband and I laughed out loud at your reticence to become part of the great circle of life while camping in Africa. Chris, exactly. I also received an email this week from Ami, who said, I've been listening to your podcast pretty much nonstop since I first discovered it a month or so ago. I listened to the podcast where the woman you interviewed mentioned the Pueblos Ingles program. I thought it sounded so interesting that I signed up. I was accepted, and I'll be volunteering this June right before I go to Lalita to get my certificate to teach yoga. After all this yoga and English speaking, I'll be woofing 1 month in Italy and at least 7 months in Ireland. I was wondering if you could do a podcast where you interview someone who has long-term woofed. It seems to be a growing trend and will definitely help me out. Thanks so much for your amazing podcasts. And as my friend Greg would say, listening to you is very expensive as it makes us want to go to all the places you mention. And for those of you who are not familiar with the term, she's talking about the Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. This is an organization that will place you as a farm worker, basically, for a short period of time on an organic farm someplace so that you can have room and board and then some time while you're there to tour the country. Not sure we're going to do an episode about it in the short term, since we just did a volunteer travel episode, and I try and space those out. But we'll look at that possibly for something in the long term. With that, I think we'll end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, you can feel free to leave a comment, as Jamie did on the episode, at amateurtraveler.com, or send me an email, as Amy did, to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more.